This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Damn right he's a Hall of Famer. Jonah Schaefer covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. He's been doing some Terps coverage as well of late because there's been some interesting Terps news going on over the last few weeks. And Jonas joins us now, courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. So, Jonas, thanks as always for joining us. Let's start with the Terps. You were at the presser for Buzz Williams. You've let it sink in a little bit. He's added some people from the portal. He's lost some people through the portal. What do you think of the hire?
It's a little bit, I guess, what I expected. It is, you know, very much Buzz doing things his way. It doesn't seem like there will be a lot of continuity with the coaching staff, which I guess is, you know, maybe what you expect with Willard getting a better job in terms of the prestige or whatever. I guess we're staring down the possibility that, like, you know, there could be almost no continuity whatsoever from the roster. A lot of Texas A&M holdovers or recruits coming to College Park. I guess you guys talked to Harry Geller. I think did he say, like, is he no longer running the Maryland basketball NIL stuff for them or what's the deal there?
He is at the moment, but yeah. He said it
TurtleNIL.com.
Yeah, but it ends soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think 24/7 was saying that, like, Buzz had plans on bringing in his own NIL operation, which is, you know, his prerogative, but a little strange to have someone who doesn't really know the lay of the land booster wise. So I guess we'll see. I mean, I just think that if he doesn't prioritize shooting, it's going to be a very, very tough room to a very, very tough walk to be elite. You know, what I wrote last week ahead of his presser was like, yeah, he was effective last year, but basically the offense that he ran and the defense that he ran are completely dissimilar from what you will see, on CBS tonight at the Final Four, because it was an offense that couldn't shoot the three well, and it was a defense that gave up a lot of threes, and that is just, like, not really the kind of way that modern basketball is played nowadays. Not to say that you can't be successful kind of going against the grain. It's just a very, very strange way of doing it, I think, considering what we know about analytics and, you know, how to build a team, I guess.
Jonas Schaefer, Maryland basketball uber fan of both men and women. I'm asking you, as that person, does this next AD have to come from outside the current confines of College Park?
I think so. Yeah. I just think that you need to think a little bit more broadly about what's possible. I think Dame Evans dropped the ball in a lot of ways, and I think some of his inertia was caused by the fact that, like, he stepped into a job that he kind of didn't deserve, or yeah, in a lot of ways didn't deserve. I mean, he was in charge of that football ship when it was sinking with the Jordan McNair stuff, and somehow he was able to parlay that into the head job because the guy who he was stepping in for wasn't any better at the job. So, I don't know how attractive the Maryland AD position would be in terms of salary or prestige, considering everything that's going on with the school and just, you know, with the lackluster booster support. But I do think that you would be, you know, kind of selling yourself short and probably not really being, you'd probably be guilty of a little bit of myopia if you're just saying that the best person that we have is someone who's already in the building, unless that, you know, he or she completely blows you away. I just think that, you know, the AD itself has been a little bit too, you know, limited in their perspective for a while now. And it probably would be, they probably would be best served to bring in someone who could really just have a fresh perspective and a new energy on rallying support, getting NIL, you know, having an idea for what that future looks like.
Jonas, let's get to the Ravens. We were talking about David Ajabo earlier in the show. Is this the year that the light bulb finally turns on for David Ajabo, or heck, is he even on the 53-man roster come September?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, you know, if he were on the bubble, I think he would be pretty safely on the side of making it. I saw that you guys, you know, had Ajabo on the rundown, so I went back and looked at his like 15 or so pressures, and like there's still some hope there based on what I saw just on film. Like, you know, there are still flashes of the guy that you remember from Michigan, where he's converting speed to power and, you know, knocking back offensive tackles. He's doing some fun stuff on stunts and twists with Matt Ibike, who is like getting double and triple teams because they don't really care a whole lot about what David Ajabo is doing. You know, and he has some nice wins with his, you know, hands and being able to beat offensive tackles and just be able to turn that edge. And listen, I think if we're willing to give, you know, Keaton Mitchell some grace in just his recovery from that horrible knee injury, then I think obviously it was a cleaner situation for Ajabo in terms of what he was coming back from. But he's going to be a year removed from that knee injury. He should be as motivated as he's ever been in his career to put together a season that is going to get him that second contract. So do I expect him to be like a 5 or 6 sack guy based on what I saw this past year? Probably not. But I do think that there is enough there just in terms of him being an athletic mover, a guy who can win despite his smaller frame, that there's at least hope for him being a guy who I think should comfortably be in the rotation next year, assuming that he stays healthy.
Talking with Jonas Schaefer, it's Inside Access here on The Fan. The draft is 2 weeks from Thursday. So yeah. 17 days
10
away.
Days from 10 days from now, -3.
Yes. So with that in mind, curious to get your sense of this or your opinion on this. How confident are you that Mark Andrews is still a Raven when the draft is over as we sit right now?
I would still say pretty confident. You know, obviously the Marquise Brown of it all hangs in your, hangs in the back of your mind a little bit, but, he's obviously not the asset that Hollywood was at that point. So I don't know how much urgency there would be in, you know, waiting until draft day to figure this stuff out. I mean, obviously, you know, it's still a castle there. They still lock down the information pretty tight. But I think based on what we know about, you know, this Ravens team, Todd Monken, Lamar, Mark, just the culture that's important, I think it would take, you know, whatever it would take and not a, you know, not a round less to for the Ravens to part ways with Mark Andrews. So I do think that, you know, if you were to put a gun to my head, I would say that Mark is still on the team by the end of that weekend, that draft weekend. But obviously, if, you know, push comes to shove and certain teams don't like how the tight end draft falls for them, or just don't really like how their team is coming together otherwise, or maybe the Ravens asking price does drop, then it's certainly a possibility. I just think that there are things that Mark does that go beyond the stat sheet or the film room that I think make it more likely that he would stay in Baltimore, as opposed to Hollywood Brown, who was a little bit more of an unhappy camper.
Yeah.
As we are, as Gigi said, 10 days from 10 days from now, -3, 17
3
days,
weeks from last Thursday, Jonas.
Until the draft starts. Have you started contemplating how this first round might go down? Do you think they look at a Malachi Starks or some sort of chess piece DB? Are there certain D tackles you think that they probably can't pass on, but will any of them be there? You started noodling on the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I'm addicted to Googling, you know, NFL mock drafts at this point. So I'm checking in every couple hours just to see what, you know, PFF or ESPN or whoever it is thinks that is going to be there for the Ravens 27. I think this week I'm going to dive more into the offense, and then next week dive more into the defense. But I do think it is more likely that defense is the answer there. I mean, I think it's going to be fascinating just because of all the possibilities. I mean, just if you go at each level, you know, defensive line, if Kenneth Grant from Michigan is there and you want your you know, nose tackle of the future with a guy mm-hmm. who could be a potential, you know, pass rusher at the position. Maybe it's hard to say no to him. I imagine that the Ravens have done their homework on Mike Green, but can you withstand the PR blowback from him and everything that that has been swirling around with his, you know, itinerant career? You know, Donovan Azaraku, is he big enough to hold up for the Ravens at that edge spot, despite him being, you know, a huge sack producer? Jahad Campbell, I think, would be a great fit for the Ravens, even though they're, you know, publicly supportive of Trenton Simpson, just because, you know, he is just like a missile out there. And obviously he has that Alabama connection. Cornerback, you could, you know, sell me on any number of guys. But it does seem like Malachi Starks is the guy who probably at this point in the you know, offseason calendar is the guy most mocked to the Ravens. And maybe we get to the draft and there is this kind of inversion where people fall more in love with him than they do Emmanuel from South Carolina, because, you know, the Malachi Starks film and the character. And, you know, I think Bob McGinn, you know, had his anonymous scout stuff. And I guess Malachi Starks just got rave reviews from the Georgia family. And, you know, Kirby Smart thinks so highly of him. And I'm sure that will go a long, long way. Maybe he's not available there at 27. But he does seem like the kind of guy who wears so many hats and is such a good leader, such a good, you know, culture guy, that if he's there at 27, unless you really have serious concerns about his, you know, athletic testing, that he would be a guy who would be hard to pass up on.
Jonas Schaefer covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. Jonas, always great, man.
Thank you
so much for your time. It's 2 weeks from Thursday, or 3 weeks from last Thursday, or 10 days from 10 days minus three, if you're trying to figure all this out.
I hope this isn't the first time you guys are making that joke.
No.
Oh, it
won't be the last.
Probably the 15th time today.
And it won't be
the last hour.
It changes daily, though. So tomorrow we have to get back in the lab. So
it could be nine days minus two.
Yeah,
or no, minus one.
Yeah.
Is there a subscription service where I can keep track of just that?
Yes.
Bone's going to be tweeting out all the various permutations.
Yes, he's putting it into the Bone Simulator.
Especially if Florida wins tonight.
Yes. That's a big night.
Please, Jonas.
Big night for Bone. Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Okay,
we're going to hit the hot corner next, and we got a lineup. We'll give it to you. It's interesting. Also, what kind of team are the Orioles facing in the Arizona Diamondbacks? We'll tell you next here on The Fan. Orioles and Diamondbacks start a series tonight. 9:40 is first pitch with Baltimore Baseball tonight at 6. The Bone and Ben Hall. The dream team. Bone's on the Beltway.
Ultimate dream team.
Coming up at
Bones
6 o'clock. That's coming up at 6.
They're on opposite sides of the national title game, too.
Yes, they are.
I want to cry.
Bone, you got to lock in on money. What's to cry about? You're like locked.
I want to win some money. I want to win the Duke knocked me out of the survivor pool. That I should cry. You're alive. And if you only need one outcome,
I'm hedging. But I want the win. I want the max.
You're going to win.
Well, that's fine. But now you make sure there's a minimum. You're raising your floor.
Yes.
Yeah,
you're not hurting your ceiling.
By the way, assistant GM of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Amiel Salde, is going to join us tomorrow at 2:30 on the program. But lineup for tonight, Bone.
Gunnar Henderson leading off at shortstop. Adley Rutschman behind the dish, batting second. Ryan O'Hearn in right field, batting third. Jordan Westberg is the DH, batting cleanup. Cedric Mullins back in the field, center field, batting fifth. Ryan Mountcastle, first base, batting sixth. Heston Kerstad, left field, batting seventh. Ramon Urias, third base, batting eighth. And Jackson Holliday, second base, batting ninth.
Jason, what did you see? How many DHs have they had already this
season?
Seven. Wow. It's
starting. I mean, I'm talking about in the starting lineup. Which they should be flow. Like, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, of all the things that they
don't
do
have
that
a Dave Winfield
off,
at the end of his career.
I don't really care about. Well, they do. It's Paul. I keep calling him Paul O'Neill. I wish he was Paul O'Neill. It's Tyler O'Neill, but they won't play him. They won't use him like just a DH, because right now with Kowser hurt, they've got a corner outfield problem, which again is kind of mind blowing, because they just gave Laureano $5 million, but we're not sure he can do anything. And they've done nothing but draft outfielders at the top of the draft. Like, they've done a whole lot of that.
Yeah. So what do you think of this Arizona team that the Orioles are going to face tonight?
Led the majors in runs last year, had a great offseason. They have committed ownership and a front office that is uber aggressive. I like them a lot. They lost Christian Walker, but I kind of like the way they've reallocated their resources. And for me, Corbin Carroll's back to being a danger man again at the top of this lineup. And the last time we saw the Diamondbacks, he was really still scuffling. And I don't think he was ever really healthy last year and finally got healthier at the end of last year. But the power's back. They ran all over the Orioles the last time they saw him. I have no reason to think they won't do it again. Eugenio Suarez is off to a monster start. Like they're a really good baseball team. Zach Gallen struck out 13 Yankees in his first start of the year. Like Zach Gallen is a true ace. I don't think it's going to be particularly easy for the Baltimore Orioles to win this series. It's another big ballpark, lot of volume to cover in the outfield. And again, the way they built this team, they don't have corner outfielders right now. Like if you want to catch the ball, then it's got to be Laureano. Mm-hmm. And I also don't understand right field is usually a little easier than left field. Why do they want to put Heston in left field?
Do you want to Hearn?
How's Heston's
now? I guess they're thinking righty lefty, and I'm sure they're looking at spray charts and where they think the ball's going to go.
And you want to go with a big
arm. But here's the thing: he was in left field again.
It was
Laureano yesterday with
Friday,
the lefty, so he was there with
field.
The righty. Yeah. So I get it. I just think this team has inherent defensive flaws.
They do.
Right now, and I don't know how easily they're going to be fixed. Especially in the outfield.
Make big trades.
Yeah.
Very uber aggressive.
Yeah. But look, I think Arizona's a better team. I think Arizona is a hungrier team. I think Arizona is a more competitive team than the Baltimore Orioles on paper to start the year. And certainly the way things have unfolded. Now, Arizona had some hiccups against the Nats. The weather we know around here this weekend wasn't great.
No Ketel Marte.
Maybe that had a little something to do with it. Marte got hurt at the end of that Yankee series.
Nat series.
Tweaked it. I thought he tweaked it the Yankee series.
He run around the bases against the Nationals.
And then the Nationals early in the series. Because he went over the team total the first game and then hasn't played since. It's an athletic team. It's a good baseball team. And they're good at home. Now, the ball does, carry there some, even though it's a bigger ballpark. We'll see. But, and I'm not telling you Zach Gallen's going to give out a whole bunch of free passes. But the Orioles right now are 24th in walk rate. So that's what I'm looking at. Because there's things you can control and things you can't. But I've been harping on the quality of at-bats, even when they were hitting a ton of home runs last year, because I'm like, at some point, you're not going to beat up on the other team's B and C relievers every night. That's not going to carry. It certainly doesn't carry in the postseason, which might explain why they suck so much in the postseason. But, can we get into 5, 6, 7 pitch at-bats? Can we try to get Zach Gallen off the mound somewhere in the fifth inning? Can we work a few free passes and make him pitch with guys on base? I don't know. It's a feast or famine offense. We've been saying that forever.
Orioles and Diamondbacks, 9:40 first pitch with Baltimore baseball tonight. Bones on the Beltway. That's 6 o'clock here on The Fan. Coming up next, though, it's six-pack time, and we stick with the Orioles. Our six most concerning signs through the first 10 games from the Baltimore Orioles. We'll give you our six-pack list next here on The Fan. Six-pack time. Six-pack sponsored by the Good Feet Store. Come in and try the Good Feet feeling today. Comfort, energy, performance, and pain relief at the Good Feet Store. Go to goodfeet.com. It's six-pack of six most troubling signs through the first 10 games. And Beltway Ben, let's get started.
Number six.
This might be my own personal kind of vendetta thing, and I put it at six because it's at six because it's not the most important thing. But you were talking about drawing lines to people earlier, and Dwight Smith to this guy. I'm over Jorge Mateo. Like I'm done with Jorge Mateo. He's one of those guys that was a lot of fun to watch. It would have been a lot of fun to watch one of those bad Oriole teams. Mm-hmm. He doesn't seem like a high IQ player. He is not an outfielder. So stop telling me he's an outfielder. He's a defensive replacement and a guy you want late in the game to steal a bag. That's all he is. Yep. And they want him to do more, and he can't.
Well, the problem is they built the kind of team they would build.
Yes.
He would be what you're talking about.
I totally
get it. But that's not how they build their teams.
I can't see him in the outfield ever again, Jason. I just can't.
Hey, they gave Ramon Laureano all that money. I thought he's the backup center fielder.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you.
This is at six for me because it hasn't factored in yet, but it's a real thing, and it has the potential to be highly problematic. There's not a closer on this roster. And they, because they're a feast or famine offense, and oh, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
These games have been lopsided one way or the other. But what we've seen from Felix Bautista is shaky. And they're obviously really coddling him and being super careful with him. But like, you start to get into a bunch of games with multiple high leverage innings, and I just don't know how that's going to play out. Soto and Dominguez have been awesome. Maybe awesome's too strong.
They've been really good.
They've been very good.
Yeah.
But they're not closers at this stage of their career. And the fact that they don't have real closer insurance, it's gonna show up.
Number five.
I put this at five because we knew it going in, but it's still significant. They're, most nights they're not going to get length out of their starter. Like, it's just not, it's not who these guys are. It's not what they built. There is no thoroughbred. There is no ace. There is no horse. And getting more than 15 outs out of these guys who are all mostly pitch to contact guys and don't, outside of Slim, don't get a whole lot of swing and miss, it makes it a chore. And when your defense is terrible, we'll get to that much higher.
Yes.
It all compounds, but I just don't see a lot of length coming. And even when Bradish and Grayson come back,
Who are they?
Stop.
They're not going to be like
Pete. Stop.
Yeah. Now, starting pitching is higher for me. My five is in part your six, but injuries. Who knew that Colton Cowser getting hurt was going to blow up their defensive outfield? Like, what do we got going on here? Because they can't play Cowser every day. And to your point, Felix Bautista ain't right, so you don't have a closer. And Grayson getting hurt, like, they don't have the starting pitching they thought they'd have.
Number four.
I was torn on whether to put this in or not, but I another thing I'm over, these weird lineup adjustments every single GD day. Like, let's get a group. You trust these guys. At least you tell me you trust these guys, and let's go with them. You can make minor tweaks day to day, but I don't want to see what I saw yesterday ever again either.
We're basically simpatico. I have this under the sort of heading of poor management. Bad feel for platoons. Not understanding a hot hand and when to ride them. Not understanding who's a reverse splits pitcher and who's not, and planning accordingly. Janky lineups. Terrible defensive pairings. If you've got a pitcher who gives up a lot of fly balls and is a pitch-to-contact guy, you can't have two DHs and a shortstop as your outfield.
Yes.
It just doesn't work. It's not going to work, especially in Kauffman Field, one of the biggest outfields in the American League. It doesn't make sense, and they have no feel for it. They've had no feel for it. It's a problem.
Yeah, I'm with Jason the star, because we talked about them not bringing in closer insurance ad nauseum throughout the offseason. It hasn't affected them yet because they haven't been in a single save situation, but it's coming.
Six pack of our six most troubling signs through 10 games. And Beltway Ben, let's continue.
Number three.
Bad vibes. Low energy team. They get out hustled. When they fall behind, it's like a death sentence. There does not seem to be spirit. There does not seem to be energy. I just feel like they picked up where they left off last year, which was a lethargic sort of feel sorry for yourself vibe that's come off this team since they stopped winning at 100-win pace. Remember when we used to talk around here that they never get swept?
Yep.
They never lose three games in a row.
How much fun was that?
Right? They're so far removed from that now. It's sad. And that's not that long ago.
My three is the feast or famine offense. Like, they'll score 8-1 game, and then they'll score like they did in Kansas City. Then they'll combine for three the other two games. They have no consistency offensively whatsoever.
Number two.
With much respect to what we saw from Sagano on Saturday and what we've seen from Eflin so far, starting pitching's number two. They get no length out of it. I don't trust it, what they have. Their decision to not prioritize getting a real starter in the offseason is still befuddling to me. And I think in part, if they do have their undoing, that's going to be a big part of their undoing.
My two is your three. And I think it deserves to be pretty high because I don't buy it. And we bring a lot of people on this show, and there's a lot of people locally and nationally who've been telling you since the start of last season and when they were crushing the ball through April and May that it's an elite offense. And then even as the whole thing cratered in the second half last year, they said it's an elite offense. I don't think it's an elite offense. They're 24th in walk rate. They still have bad habits. They still swing at stuff outside the zone, and they still hope and pray somebody hits a 2- or 3-run homer to save the day. I just feel like this thing is still off. It reminds me too much of last year.
It's a good word. It's off.
I understand that Gunner is not quite Gunner, but I mean, Gunner's hitting the ball 108 here, 109 there. Like, They let a switch hitting 40 home run guy leave, and they replaced him with a beer league DH who they're running out there in the outfield every day. Like, whatever. I'm not buying their offense. Not that it's what they built.
Number one.
They are a horrible fielding, fundamentally unsound, like bad, low IQ baseball team. They can't control the run game. They don't know how to run the bases. They don't know when to slide. They don't have the second baseman on the bag to turn double plays. They don't know how to hit the cutoff man. Half the time, they don't know what base to throw to. It is little league stuff. It's the kind of crap we endured during the worst of the rebuild, and now they're supposed to be the best team in baseball, and it's the same crap over and over and over again. And why do I think that is? Because that's stuff that don't show up in algorithms. They don't show up on stat sheets. SIG doesn't have a perfect formula for that. You need actual scouts. You need bird dogs. You need to know how people play and what their tendencies are. There's some old school stuff that would tell you O'Neill's washed and he can't play the outfield anymore. But no, let's give him $17 million anyway. It's baked into their cake. And it's a problem. It's been a problem. It's going to continue to be a problem.
We are simpatico. And where have you gone, Hanser Alberto? Those were fun days when you had bad baseball players playing every day. These are supposed to be cream of the crop players. And it's been like this since June last year. Just dumb, low IQ, bad defense. It's just bad.
Making outs on the base pass. Yes. I mean, it's they should be beyond this.
Yes.
Way to take down the ginger gorilla.
Yeah, having the bad vibes. It's just the start. There's so much that we've seen that feels like last year. And you brought this up earlier in the show, Jason. I agree. The fact 2023, when they were down in games, all right, well, they're going to come back. You'd expect them to come back. They had the most come from behind wins in all of baseball that year, where now it's just, you do not get that feeling at all.
We'll come back, get the text of the day, and get you ready. Oh, preview tomorrow's show, but most importantly, get you ready for Beltway Bone. It's the special edition of BBT, and it's at 6 here on The Fan. Hey, before we get to the text of the day, shout out to our guy Cordell Woodland. He is now on his honeymoon.
He's not listening on the Odyssey app, I don't think.
I think he's...
Nor should he be.
He's having a couple tropical beverages.
I usually would endorse it, but no. Not for Cordell.
What's that? Listening to the Odyssey.
Yes, listening to us on the Odyssey. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
We had a great time at his wedding.
Awesome.
Shout out
time.
To his family friend Wayne Thomas, who insists he listens every day and proved it.
Mentioned X Factors.
Yeah, so
that clinches it.
Yeah, so it was an awesome time.
Cordell's the man. We love Cordell.
Beltway Ben and Bone and Joe LaCroix.
Margie
was there. Yeah, it was
Rita.
Rita Hubbard
was there with her mom.
Yes, her mom was there. Awesome. So yeah, it was a good time. It was Margie referred to it as the dry run for our wedding. So which is now 2 months from the end of this month.
It's gonna be a high bar to clear. That was a heck of a wedding.
It was a good time. It was a good time. Let's get the text of the day.
Bone, you have to take somebody to his wedding.
Check 1-2. Check.
Text today is sponsored by Oarsman Automotives, driven by OarsmanCars.com. Your trade is always worth more at Oarsman. Shop their entire inventory now at OarsmanCars.com. Text today comes from Eric in Baltimore, who says, I'm here for giving vets days off here and there, but sitting Mullins for Mateo in center field Sunday is inexcusable. Mullins has been your hottest hitter, and we're just 10 games into the season.
Yeah, well, the Jorge Mateo part of it still grinds my gears.
Dude, it'd be one thing if he had a normal spring, he wasn't coming back from a serious injury, and they ran, like, he was in center field 2 days a week in the Grapefruit League or something like that, 3 days a week. That's not what happened. He had no spring. He had, like, a couple days in extended spring training. He's barely played through the first 9 games. Game 10, let's put him in center field. With a kid who tends to get up a lot of contact in general, especially on the road, in that ballpark, with corner outfielders who don't belong out there either.
I'm not. I know you're a bigger fan of Jorge Mateo than I am. He's worn out his welcome at the Wyman household.
They're using him wrong.
You should be on the bench until you need a stolen base.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or it's a backup shortstop.
Yes, the backup shortstop is good. I don't want him in the outfield ever again.
Or maybe if you're going to use him in a ballpark like the one he's used to at home, not one he's rarely plays in. Period. And he hasn't really played any baseball since he got hurt, which
I'm
is a
storming
long time
the warehouse.
And maybe behind Eflin and not Capovich.
Yeah. Hey, I'm storming the warehouse if he's in the outfield again. Bone, what do we have on tomorrow's show?
I got bigger issues.
I do too.
Tomorrow's show, we have Pete Prisco. Uh-huh. We have the Diamondbacks assistant
Amiel
GM.
Amiel Sauday. Pikesville High legend.
We have Mike Bordick, who is an Oriole Hall of Famer.
Yes. And also a legend.
And we have Chad Reuter.
Writer.
He just did a five. I think he did Chad a five round mock.
Probably
I
don't
think
seven.
He always does seven though.
Was it seven? I think
he's probably building.
I think he's building.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I know. There's suspense. There's five out there.
There's six and seventh rounds.
He always does seven rounders every year.
Hey, don't you change that dial? You know what's coming up next?
Dream Team.
It's not only BBT, but it's a special BBT.
Ear candy.
Bone's driving on the Beltway. It's Beltway Ben.
Bone's selling ice cream.
And the Bone, he's hedging his brackets coming up, but he's getting you ready for Orioles baseball. Orioles and Diamondbacks, first pitch until 9:40. But BBT is next here on The Fan.